VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on, settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books, contacts, calendar, double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility. There's more to iPhone.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Now.
Okay, well, you don't have to do it because you didn't read the email.
No, I did read
the email. No, he means in the modern game.
No, I mean, do you mean historically or now?
That wasn't fair.
Yes, I did read the email. I always read your emails, though, and they're the first things I read.
And a Proust and all the rest of it. Thank you. I feel really honoured by that. Hello and welcome back. Regulars to this parish will know that at the end of the Ruck podcast, we cast our nominations for God or Goddess of the Week. Well, this week I'm going a bit early, and for the first time in Ruck history, I'm nominating one of our panellists. In our esteemed company on the pod today, we have a man who was so excited about the game he saw at the weekend that he took an overnight flight back, came straight from the airport to the Times studios, no breakfast, still reeking of the post-match braai, desperate to tell all. Barnsley, Stuart Barnes, straight from Loftus-Versfeld. Best game of the year, best finish. God, how lucky you were. And now we've got you on the pod. Brilliant to have you here.
Thank you, Owen. Wonderful. Nice to be back. It was a great night in Pretoria.
And so we'll talk about it properly, but did you sort of slightly feel that the world's slightly turning on its axis?
There are chinks, if that's what you mean, in the All Black armour, definitely. The pace, the precision of New Zealand was challenged by the power of the Springboks, and yes, it's getting more interesting as we head towards Japan, yep.
And you must have just sat there thinking, what a lucky man I am. I mean, we go to lots of rugby, and occasionally you get that, don't you?
Get paid for it as well. Fantastic. But
so pleased for you.
But I did fly.
That's the deal, is it?
I did fly premium economy as well, there and back.
Now you're showing off.
I haven't done that in 25 years. It's a bit disappointing.
Okay. Hold on. I've got my violin here. I'll go
and
get that.
He's just trying to upset the rest of the panellists.
It's a hard life.
Yeah, no, listeners need to know that we'd never fly premium economy. Also, we have a guest from almost as far, well, Yorkshire. That's me flourishing my shamelessly southern credentials. Chris Jones, here of the Sunday Times, and numerous other titles. Chris, great to have you back. You were where at the weekend?
Well, I wasn't enjoying as much of a big night as Pretoria on a Saturday night is. Those of you who've been there will understand what I'm talking about. I was in Manchester, where almost all of Newcastle turned up, either to watch the football or the rugby. And it was not a great day for either of them, because Dean Richards revealed yet again his wonderful tactic of playing 13 men against 15 and losing. It's just not on. Strange game, very strange game, and unfortunately a terrible injury for Marlon Yard.
Yeah, that looked desperate, didn't it? Last season, when obviously Newcastle had that great fourth place finish, they benefited from the fact that they weren't playing Champions Cup rugby. And now they've had this team that's won one out of six. The games get bigger and tougher, and they need a rest and to rebuild, really, don't they?
Last year, the major problem for them was they were going off, they thought, to Russia in midwinter. In fact, they ended up in Georgia to play their Challenge Cup game. So that involved an awful lot of messing about and travelling. They're going to be probably flying premium economy down to Toulon.
They'll never accept that.
Where they will be taking probably half a team because Gonover knocked himself out after 7 minutes. Toby Flood injured his shoulder.
Yeah.
And, you know, they are short of players. Will Welsh hobble off with a bad ankle injury, and just when they didn't need it. I mean, Dean believes that they could be quite a dangerous team because, you know, you look at their back line when they're all fit and they've got some serious power there, particularly out on the wings. But they can't afford to have these sort of injuries.
It's one of those things, isn't it? You spend all season battling to get into top six and qualify for Europe. And once you're in, it's almost a penalty for being there.
Last year, Owen, I can remember writing about Northampton saying every year for about the last 3 years, Northampton do everything in their power to get into Europe. They're not good enough. They lose a couple of games in the Premiership, a little bit like Newcastle at the moment. Then they go into Europe. Someone like Leinster puts 50 points on them, and it's a crisis. And you wonder, why qualify? And from Newcastle's point of view, even if they were halfway up the table, they're not going to win the European Cup. It is, in the end, a distraction.
Absolutely. Now, hang on a sec, Al. I haven't introduced you yet. I didn't mean not to talk to you earlier.
That's okay.
Still love you. We are also joined by our Ruck regular, chief feature writer for Rugby World, Alan Dimmock.
Oh, hello.
Al, you were at the extraordinary Worcester game, correct?
I wasn't at it, actually, but I did watch it. And I have to say, if that's what you'd call a bottom-of-the-table clash, I'd rather watch the scrap down at the bottom for a large part of the season over the scrap at the top, because what a phenomenal game of rugby that was.
Worcester good or Bristol bad?
A bit of both, actually. Worcester just played incredible front-foot rugby for the majority of that game, but Bristol, I mean, if you want to use the word patterns, their defensive shape was atrocious for the entirety of that game. You know, they were tackling air for a large part of it, but there was a number of Worcester players who just played out of their skin. I mean, I'm sure we can go on to talk about Ryan Mills and the potential that he has and why he's, I mean, after a couple of performances, it'd be early to say he should be in the mix for England, but what a phenomenal player he is.
And their 9-10-12 looks as good and as well coordinated and dangerous as any in the Premiership at the moment, which is a weird thing to say.
Oh, I think
especially if you're Owen Slot and you were tipping them for relegation.
Absolutely. Well, I think the key there actually is as entertaining as you're going to get.
Yeah, and
that actually goes a long way to winning people over. You compare it to the way that they've played and the way that Bristol have attacked, even in losing. You know, they racked up 40 points the week before and still lost, but they are playing an exciting brand of rugby. It's almost like, we'll see how many you can score and we'll see how many we score and we'll tally it up at the end of the game, which is fine. But when you compare it to Sale, as we were talking about there, who are have zero try bonus points, and this is a season where there are lots of tries being scored. In fact, a good friend of mine, Charlie Morgan, wrote for the Telegraph the other day about the rate of tries being scored. There was 6.4 per game as of last week.
So do we recognise the Telegraph?
Well, What is it?
The Telegraph.
Oh, it's...
Anyone
still going?
Want to illuminate us on that?
Yeah, yeah. When the railroads went west in America, the Telegraph poles went up.
Fantastic.
Yes.
Barnsley, yeah. Okay, with you. Yeah, so Charlie, who's been putting in railroads in the States...
has realised that the rate of tries as of last week was double that of 2009-2010. But then you look at... You say, wow, that's fantastic. Loads and loads of tries being scored. Sale still have zero try bonus points this season. And that is a frightening statistic. Particularly when we're talking about Newcastle and how well they did last year. There was a real dearth of try bonus points for them as well. But they won games by a couple points. They nicked it here or there with sheer grit and determination. It looks like this season that might not be enough, particularly when you've got to fight in a couple fronts.
Yeah.
I suppose it helps them, Newcastle, that going into Europe, Toulon are having an absolute stinker of a season as well.
Okay, listen, I want to return to that, but I need to talk about myself for a bit first, because it's not all about you guys. So my own treat for the weekend was a visit to the Stoop, where I was brilliantly entertained by a great match, but also one of the most extraordinary tries executed with one of the most extraordinary pieces of skill that I've ever seen.
Early penalty goal for Marcus Smith. It's going to drift wide. And what's happened there? Joe Marchand has come out of nowhere and I think he scored a try. They'll look at it. It doesn't cross the line. Marchand gets it. Marchand puts it down. It's an extraordinary score for Harlequins.
If you haven't seen it, listeners, Joe Marchant's try, then please do. It will make you smile. And you can watch it on the Times website, where we have highlights of all the Gallagher Premiership games. And if that sounds like a plug, then that's because it is one. Now, Al, when you were a young superstar prop, I guess you scored a few tries like that yourself.
Absolutely never.
I initiated one.
Hmm? You initiated one.
We were on tour in Canada.
What? So you missed the penalty.
Yeah, I was taking the penalty, and it was in Ottawa. And it was about -100, and the Arctic wind blew the ball from the post over to almost out of touch. And our winger Dave Patterson ran up, caught it, and put it down. While the Canadian guys were suddenly going, "What's he done that for?" And we won the match.
Seymour Jones always blaming the wind.
So do we think that Marcus Smith actually was studying video of you in Ottawa?
Absolutely.
Year are we talking?
About then. And it wasn't a leather ball.
Who are you playing for?
This is when Radda were on tour. We took the world by storm.
I want to go back to the relegation thing. So the 3 weeks ago we sat around, or generally it was agreed the Premiership was the most exciting Premiership in ever, if that's a sentence. And now when you look at it, it's a two-tier Premiership with two at the top and no one else near them. So the relegation battle, or who's going to go down, is unfathomable. Anyone want to have a go at it?
Well, I've seen a lot of the Worcester and Newcastle lads recently, and what I saw on Saturday is the most fantastic exhibition of sideways rugby. There is so much of it being played, lateral stuff, and all these teams are so desperate desperate to hold on to the ball. They just go sideways to side, and it's really boring at times.
Well, hang on. How can it be the best Premiership ever if it's really boring and you're seeing lots of boring stuff?
I didn't say it was the most exciting Premiership.
Ah, you didn't. OK. See,
lots of tries, though.
I can throw my voice, but I think that was Owen.
How many times have you seen Sale? Because I would say that they are comprehensively the least entertaining team I've seen.
Well,
so
twice
far. Seen,
but they are holding on to this great belief that their entire life will change when Faf gets back. Because as he's done for South Africa, he will do for them, which is speed the whole thing up. I mean, they have got backs who can score tries, but, you know, they just don't generate quick enough ball.
He will make a massive difference. He was outstanding for them last year, wasn't he? And he's been one of the best players in the Rugby Championship. So a fit Faf de Klerk is going to make a big difference.
But it's a strength and weakness, Barnsley, because he's not there. You get you're seeing at the moment.
Yeah.
You know, and to build yourself around that, and you could argue with South Africa, to build yourself around him, what happens when he's injured?
Yeah.
So at the moment we've got
Newcastle
bottom, Sale second bottom, and then Bristol. I mean, is that how is that roughly where it will be? Do you think Worcester will slowly sink again? It appears to me that Worcester are putting on the burners and getting slightly more confident. Also, you've got to remember that all those teams will keep most of their players,
yeah,
won't they?
Yeah.
So Harlequins, who are unconvincing still, might struggle. Bath, who are really the masters of hot and cold performance, they might struggle when they lose a few more.
Northampton are down as well.
Northampton, but you look at Leicester, they're not really playing very well. They're up in fifth. Any team at the moment, I think, outside of the top two and Wasps, is just about capable of going on a losing run with other teams winning. I think it's far too early to say who are, apart from the obvious ones, who are going to be at the bottom.
Yeah, I think Gloucester you can't put in. I think Gloucester have...
They're still
inconsistent,
well.
But I think they're...
Yeah, they've got enough
They're not going to tumble all the way down, but I agree with you. Almost anyone else could go all the way down. Al, are you going to tell us who's going to be relegated?
No, absolutely not, because I tried to say that a podcast a couple weeks ago, and then Worcester pulled out the performance
of the
season so
far. We're
going to
dig it out at the end.
Yeah, absolutely.
By the end of the season, everyone will have predicted everyone to go down, so it's safe then. We're all okay.
We've all done... So you've done Worcester. Al, you've said Worcester.
Yep.
Start the season for the Times. I tip Worcester. Jonesy, are you?
Bristol. That's shot, isn't it? Yeah.
Everyone's gone quiet now.
No, but this is a very strange part of the season anyway, because you get this 6-week break now, and I understand next year that the Premiership won't actually start until the knockout stages of the World Cup, because, you know, it's we're fitting all this into one pint pot. So you've got this massive break now, where someone like Bristol, you know, could pick up injuries along the way. I mean, all of them could pick up injuries, particularly guys in the Champions Cup. And by the time we come out the other side of this, and then you're certainly playing in the international window, you know, there's an awful lot going to happen in the next 6-8 weeks, which could be seriously important.
I mean, there's a lot of stock being put there, though, in the changing of personnel for certain teams. There are certain issues for teams already that you can see that are emerging as teams that are going to be issues for a large part of the season. So Bristol against Worcester, for example... You know, for all that they want to play, their scrum fell apart like a wet paper bag.
And Bristol's.
And that is a problem that you can foresee. There's no quick fix for that.
But they haven't got any new arrivals to sort that out, have
exactly.
they?
Exactly. Yeah. So, whilst other teams are personnel, it's not like that scrum is going to magically become better.
Yeah, they haven't got a South African, like Sale of sort of pinning their hopes. That's what you're saying, isn't
yeah.
it? That Bristol are where they are. And I think they... Always from the start of the season, they had, you know, glamorous backs and question, can they win enough ball to feed them?
Yeah, and for example, Sale, we've seen a number of times this season already, and there's a reason why they've got that big fat donut in the try bonus, because when they get into the 22, Faf de Klerk is not going to be the one that makes sure that their forwards get over the line when they're 5 metres out. And that's a problem that they've had. That's why we've seen so many passes being flung wide and going over people's head and into touch, because they haven't quite figured out yet how to lean forward, grunt a bit and get a try.
Which is strange, because they've got some serious
absolutely.
Pieces of meat there who could
do
it. They've got Phillips, who came up from Bath. I mean, they're just not getting out of him with the sort of thing that you'd be hoping that he'd be doing, which is, you know, just barreling over.
What I find strange is that if you look at money spent on the squads, Sale have the cheapest, spent the least money on their squad this season. Yeah, they've got a big money bags owner and ambition to go further. So I can't quite understand why they didn't spend
more. Well, they
addressed
that after the game, and they said, you know, they have got players they're identifying, but they couldn't come this year because obviously World Cup year. They will be having them for the next season.
Right.
That's their absolute belief, they will have a much stronger squad. Whether they can hold on for now
is debatable.
Sort of a bit of a holding pattern, isn't it, that's unsatisfactory.
Yeah. Well, Steve Darmon also did, when I asked him, did you give yourself the vote of confidence, he said, yes, I did, because obviously he's on the board. So when they're in trouble, he actually sort of looks in the mirror and gives himself a vote of confidence. So
I think
it's a strange scenario.
This
there.
Podcast can officially declare Steve Darmon's job safe. Barnsley, let's go back to God of the Week and your weekend. So the international season's not far away. England will start off against the two teams that you just watched, South Africa and the All Blacks. Against South Africa, England will be assisted by the fact that the aforementioned Faf, de Klerk, Willy Leroux,
François Lowe,
Franco Mostert, they will all be absent from the Springboks for very tedious reasons, which we can't be bothered to explain here. But nevertheless, you saw that game. How do you think England's going to match up? How good were those teams?
South Africa are a completely different team to the one England met on tour. They're infinitely better now. They have resurrected a lot of the old South African beliefs. They're brutal on the gain line. First 5 minutes of this match, they went through New Zealand tacklers about five times, and that set the tone for the first hour of the game. It should have been enough to win the game. That's the South African way.
And you're saying that, so you're saying that they were the old South African way.
They were the old South African way.
But when they beat England in the summer, it was quite a lot of the old South African way. So you're saying that they've actually accentuated that. They're better.
Yeah, they have. And defensively, they're not the same team. In Dielende and Creel and Pollard, who is getting better by the game. You've got to remember, Pollard was out for a long time. And when Pollard has played, they historically have been quite good. When he's been out for 2 years, they fell to pieces. This guy is underestimated.
But Pollard, he almost lost his leg, didn't he?
Sorry?
He almost lost his leg.
Yeah, he did. He did. And now he's one of the best tens again. But the midfield three caused big problems. New Zealand thought they could get Sonny Bill and Crotty, who came in last minute, threw them on the offload, and they couldn't. Sonny Bill got hit hard first time. Ended up off the field, very aggressive defence. New Zealand wanted to play the kick game, but Diante is improving. Everyone keeps saying, oh, he's great with the ball in hand, but going backwards. Even Willy Leroux was up for the defensive game. They're going to miss him as well because he controls them. But overall, you know, if England were playing the team that took the field in Pretoria, you would have to say they would be underdogs without any shadow of doubt. But I must say, Faf de Klerk is a huge loss because he gives the power of their team shape. And it's all well and good being big and bustling, but if you don't go the right places, you're struggling.
Yeah, and it was when they took him off that the world folded, wasn't it?
14 points. Ambrose Papier came on. It was his fourth cap. Two of them he's been a makeshift wing. He had 8 minutes, which is double his previous test time as a scrum half. What happens? They lose the game. So
they should bring François Hugard in for that Twickenham game, shouldn't they? They can't.
This is the problem.
What a shame.
They could go Pinard, Rad. It's the problem.
Cobus Reinach? Oh, no, they can't play him.
There's so many. You know, François Lowe had a wonderful game. He outplayed Kieran Reid.
So really, England's smartest play was by contracting all the best South African number nines to Premiership clubs.
Yeah, well, short term, long term, slightly different.
Yeah, no, it's not helping the World Cup. But
one thing I did hear on the grapevine, it might not be true, but I was hearing a whisper from fairly good sources in Pretoria.
Anything on the grapevine that's not true, we like want to hear it.
Okay, it's true. Dwayne Vermeulen will be coming back from Japan. I think the Japanese will generously release him to play against England. Changes things.
Al, do you see England in a short space of time getting together forward pack? Who Eddie Jones always said the base of my team is the big forward pack who could scare the rest of the world. Do you reckon that there's time to compete in that respect?
Well, I mean, there's going to be big changes in the front row. You can see those coming because, as we mentioned previously, Dan Cole's fallen out of favour. Not selected. Been told that he's fourth choice, perhaps. In the pecking order.
This is the question.
Why did this take so long, by the way, in terms of developing towards the World Cup? Yeah. Why has this taken so long?
England's development year is the World Cup year, which is that's another story, but not a good one. But who is the England front row? Could you tell me who it is?
Well, I've Well, I can only tell you what I'd have hoped for if I was an England fan, what I'd hope to see. I mean, I've mentioned a couple times on this podcast that I really rate Harry Williams and that I believe that he should be given a chance, particularly in the way that he's playing with Exeter. If you're looking to get a style of play that involves monstering people, you look at the way that Exeter play, horrible. I mean, they've got an orchestra of monsters, the way that they play rugby, mauling, scrummaging, picking and going. Harry Williams is in the heart of all that. But he's intent on making changes. Sinclair, again, you see him playing at Harlequins, and it's not exactly like Harlequins are setting the world alight. It's not exactly like he's in fantastic form. It's hard to tell. And then there's Nick Schonert, which not too many people know too much about. In fact, I made a point of speaking to Alex Corbusiero about this the other week, and I was asking him what it's like to actually scrummage against Nick Schonert. And he said that he's strong, gets into good shape, and if he's allowed to sink a scrum very low, then he's hard to move once he gets in that shape. So it seems like there's respect there from people that have played against him.
Eddie
is he ready for Test rugby?
And he's been watching Schonert recently, hasn't he? Which, again, is a weird thing, because why are you starting to watch new players in the October before the World Cup?
When Eddie joined England, he said that this year he'd have all bar about three of his squad, and he is looking at new players now.
Well, Schonert was meant to go to Argentina and got injured, didn't he?
Yeah.
So, yeah, and then
but he wasn't taken to South Africa, which I thought that was the right time for him. Chris, do you think you know who the England front row is?
Well,
and what do they do? Well, what do they do as their replacement?
Your question.
Their replacement, loose head. Obviously, Macca will start.
Yeah, your question should have an asterisk saying, but the one Eddie's actually going to pick is, because we know that Dylan will be in there.
Yeah.
From the start, when it should be Macca, George, and probably Harry Williams, with Schonert coming off the bench. Because I wouldn't start Sinclair any time soon. He's an impact guy.
He is an impact guy. And you also
bring him off the bench.
Yeah.
And loose head wise, you know,
I think Sinclair is phenomenally talented, but there's a psychology that needs to be cracked with him.
Kitsoff will get to him. If they start with Sinclair, the South African loose head, Kitsoff will make a mess of him. Absolutely right. He's 20 minutes, 25 from the bench when you've got to change the pace of the game up.
Yeah.
The first 50 minutes of Test rugby, you lay the foundations, then you use those foundations and explode. England are going the wrong way with Sinclair.
There's something to do with happiness in this, which is, we should talk about more on this ruck, but those of us who are lucky enough to go on that Lions tour, we saw a really happy Carl Singer. He was one of the cards, personality-wise, that is. And when you see him now, he just looks grumpy, doesn't he? I think someone, there needs to be some rejuvenation somehow. Maybe we can invite him on the podcast.
Well, my worries for the loose head-wise is Hepburn, you know, looked like he was going to be the guy, just like Harry Williams, can play with the ball in hand, does his tough and a tight, bring him on, he adds something to the equation. And, of course, you know, he's on the bench at Exeter and trying to get to starting time. It's really difficult for him because, you know, at one stage it seemed England had all the world's loose heads.
Yeah.
They were all there.
But then they broke them all, didn't they? They broke Benno Urbano, they broke Ellis Genge,
Mullen went off and had his time. So yeah, suddenly you're looking around going, well, who is the next one?
And if you play for Exeter, it's harder to get in the England squad anyway.
Yeah.
Well, you should talk to Newcastle about that. They'll have an argument about that. They say it's worse for them.
Yeah, well, they're bottom of the league.
Even when they were fourth, Barnsley, they were a shout.
Yeah, no, if you're Newcastle, you've got no chance of playing for England. You're listening to The Ruck, and we'll be back in a minute.
VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on, settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books, contacts, calendar, double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility. There's more to iPhone.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/acast. That's burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
Welcome back to The Ruck. So we move from Premiership to the Heineken Champions Cup, as it is now called, this weekend. I was going to ask you all to name who you think might win or be in the final, but I'm guessing everyone would say Leinster or Saracens. Please shout if you would say otherwise. Oof. I mean, I think those two stand out. So let's go beyond that. If not those two, then who?
Exeter. There's no last year they gave Leinster a real battering for 40 minutes in Dublin, but that was their second year of European rugby. It takes a while to get used to it. They were very naive. They had all the ball against Glasgow. Had they won that, they'd have been in the quarterfinals and they'd have been players. It was a freak defeat, took them out of the equation. Watching them this year, I think they've changed their game at the breakdown. I think they're not as susceptible to getting targeted by the Celtic teams. And backs are so clever, the squad is so strong, that I think Exeter should be bracketed with Leinster and Saracens, maybe just below them as third favourites, but only just.
The pool that they're in is a fascinating pool. I mean, that's going to be the one to watch for the entirety. I mean, caste, you can throw them aside. I don't think they'll be that interested in what's going on in Europe.
Not at home.
I mean, they could surprise me, but... Chiefs, Gloucester and Munster is one to keep an eye on because there's entertaining fixtures every week for that one. I agree with Stuart that I think Exeter will have too much strength in there. But you look at people that could have potentially given it a go. Could have said Montpellier. Maybe they would have given it a go this year. But actually, if you look at what's happened, they don't have a fly half at the moment for a start.
Well, they've got Cruden injured and Francois Steyn injured,
and Johan Goosen went off at the weekend. Yeah. So they don't have a fly half. They came into this season with 13 injuries. So whilst they're making good noises, and Verne Cotter saying, "Oh, we're going to change based on what happened to us in Europe last year, we're going to change tactics." He was saying that in the Sunday Times at the weekend. Actually, it doesn't look like too much is going to change, and they need to keep track of what's going on in the top 14 because they're fourth in the table and it's so competitive.
The culture of Montpellier demands that they get that top 14 first and foremost. That's their target, and Europe, doesn't matter what Verne says, Europe is an afterthought until they've won it.
Chris,
it's a recurring problem, isn't it? For the tournament, the attitude of the French clubs, because you can't convince them that this is the be-all and end-all of European rugby.
Do you think we're still there? I mean, you had Toulon, the repeat champions.
Yeah, I don't think at the moment. I don't think
that seems like a lifetime ago. Or two,
yeah, if you give you give us your 1, 2, 3 things. So,
Toulon was a generation
ago. The top 14 will be top of their list of to do things. It won't be the Heineken Cup.
Toulon was an exception, I think, as Al says, in every single way. Clermont have targeted Europe quite clearly, has been their main priority. Obviously, this year they're in the Challenge Cup, as are Stade Français, who are one of the strongest teams. They're the two financially most powerful clubs. So the French challenge is weaker. I think generally they do. I think you'll see Racing.
Yeah, I think Racing is the most likely French club.
Racing, I think, are the only French team with a sniff. I mean, Cast, I'll disagree with you, Al, because they're playing okay in France generally. They are formidable at home. They will not go through, but in front of their home crowd, they'll take a scalp. You know, I could see someone like Gloucester going there and getting a right old caning up front. They do that to teams.
Yeah, I agree. Racing look great. Okay, when things are going for them, Zeebo's on fire at 15. It's looking great, but you know they have such an attritional way of playing in France. They get so many injuries. And you say, talk about Montpellier. Yeah,
they've got a vast squad. They've got a huge squad.
I know, but the quality going that deep.
And the other thing is with Racing, you've got to remember if you're trying to go double headed in France, then what they will do, they were in the top four. They're in a strong position. They've got a big squad. They're quite comfortable. So they play Lyon. They rest up a couple of players. They accept they can lose that one. The sort of block defeat a la Bath. And then they come into their first European game at Scarlets, a massive game for them, all guns blazing. That's the way they approach the game.
No one's mentioned Scarlets, last year's semi-finalists.
I like the Scarlets, but I think
They've lost too many players, haven't they? They've got John Barkley. They haven't got Barrow anymore. They had John Barkley is gone. James Davis is injured. Aaron Shingler's injured.
The eight who's coming is a good player. It's a good player from the Free State, but I still think with the Scarlets, they are just a little bit light up front when it gets to the business end. I could see them making the semis. They play lovely rugby. They're cleverly coached. They've got good players.
They're great to watch because they're also dangerous. And that's the problem. If you're in the pool with Scarlets, you know, as Bath discovered, wasn't it? You can't take your eye off him.
And also Jonesy loves them, doesn't he?
Yeah, I mean,
that's one of the highlights of Europe when he starts referring to Llanelli and wears a red shirt into the podcast.
Oh, no, it's when he wears his Claremont gear in, but we can't do that unless he focuses exclusively on the challenge.
Sounds like we miss him.
Whilst we're talking round and round here, the glaring thing in front of us all is that we're not talking about pools 1 and 3 because we know that Leinster and Saris are just going to be devastating. We can talk round and round, but there's no escaping that fact that they are just so strong in Europe.
Yeah, the shame about that first game is that Wasps have got so many injuries at the moment. Willie LaRue's coming back.
That's Wasps and Leinster, yeah.
Yeah, and it's just a case of if they had the full Monty out there, if Joe Lawrence had been playing, they've gone there before and hurt Leinster.
Yeah, and then they've still they've hurt them. Steve says that because when he has his Wasps kit on. The version of hurting Leinster is losing by 17 points.
How many different outfits does Steve have?
Many.
Yeah, Claremont. Scarlet, sorry, Llanelli and Wasps.
Newport.
Let's just move on to one of the other things that happened at the weekend, the game that I was at, Harlequins, where Billy Vunipola did something rather extraordinary. He scored a try, and we thought he scored a try, and then the referee was just going to the TMO, and Billy said, don't bother, ref, I dropped the ball, I didn't ground it. That, as we know, is rare or completely unseen. Mm-hmm. It's like a footballer admitting that he dived or a cricketer walking. In professional sport, it is rare to never. So I would like our panel to name another player who they think might do what Billy did.
Well, if the question was who wouldn't tell a referee, I'd say everybody playing top 14 in France. No one would admit to anything over there. I would say Alex Good.
Nice.
Would have said, I knocked it off, ref.
Nice Goody. Okay.
Yeah, nice guy.
Those Argentinians, they're gentlemanly, aren't they? I think there might be one or two of those.
I think they are just because
they eat very raw meat and they're quite aggressive in the way they play. They're well brought up men, and I could see an Argentinian doing that. No, I could see someone like Hernandez doing it, you know.
I'm sort of with you,
Sanchez. Do you think Sanchez has really come up to the referee and said, "Do you know what? I should never try. I knocked it on."
I said Hernandez. I didn't say Sanchez.
I'm with you. I think maybe this is a nationality thing. Maybe just some guys are nicer than others. So I was thinking Islanders are. I mean, they're just nicer than everyone else, aren't they?
I'll tell you one bloke I know, a former teammate of mine, but Bristol, not Bath. A bloke called Simon Hogg. Do you remember him?
Yeah, I played with him quite a lot.
A gentleman rugby player. He would have been in despair if he would cheat in such a manner. Lovely man, Simon. He would have done it. As a player, I'd have been livid with him.
So you're saying that you would never in a million years consider saying that was a knock-on. Would you claim it?
I would say, in my playing days, I would bend the laws as far as I could, bend them back, and if I could do that and had to do that, yeah. And now that I'm wiser, more mellow and mature, I think Billy Vunipola is the first rugby role model of the season. I hate that phrase, sportsmen, they've got to be role models. This is role model behaviour from Billy.
In fact, Stuart's actually written about that in the current issue of Rugby World magazine. Now he believes that rugby players shouldn't be held up as role models.
Have I?
Yes, you have, yeah.
Jeez.
So actually, consistency here from...
So was that in Rugby World magazine?
Yeah.
Right.
Is it available at the moment?
Yeah, it is. Yeah,
it's on the shelves?
Yeah.
And that's a rugby magazine?
Yeah, it is, yeah.
That you write for?
I mean, I would claim that... I'm with Stuart. In my playing days, I would appeal for everything. I would try and claim it. I would definitely not have said that I'd knocked
it
off.
It's the culture, isn't it? It's hard not to.
But, I mean, okay, playing devil's advocate and jumping on the other side of this. He saved everyone a lot of time. Billy, hasn't he? Because the TMO would have caught the knock-on anyway.
Well, he hasn't. I mean, 2 days later, we're still talking about
Billy. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'd like to. I've convinced myself. I'm so madly in love with Sia Khaleesi that I've just convinced myself that he wouldn't appeal for it.
Very good. No, I like that. He's bought it completely.
Yeah, I've fallen for it, hook, line, and sinker. He's not appealing for
it. He's taken the Bok PR line.
Yeah, absolutely. Which is people that would definitely appeal for it. Any of the All Blacks. They're appealing for that try. They're claiming it all day long. Kieran Reid is claiming that that's a try.
Are we in danger of confusing being a good bloke, so Alex Goode, with not quite having the same ultra competitive, I want to win at anything? Because I was thinking about this and I didn't come up with a decent answer apart from anyone from a Pacific island, which is obviously nonsense. So I was going to say Jack Nowell, I think is a great guy, but does that mean he doesn't have that competitive edge or wouldn't?
Can I throw David Pocock into the
I was going to say him as well.
Yes. Yeah.
Because I think David would. Because he's that more rounded character, he's taken some time away from the game. I think that he has the right attitude to the sport, and I would think he would hate to think that cheats are the rocks, but I would hate to think that he wouldn't want to cheat in something as obvious as that and as important as that. And I would hope that David, if you're listening, I believe in you.
Yeah, I think we might just have him on the line. Amazing.
Do you think he pushes the laws of the breakdown to the limit as opposed to cheating?
Well, but then you'd say, well, what about Richie McCaw?
God, we're wading into a lot of grey here, aren't we?
Well, he was a referee, and I'll just say about the Southern Hemisphere lads as well.
Let us just be clear.
If
we're going to have a list of people who would never, ever admit they hadn't grounded, Richie McCaw would be somewhere near the top. With Owen Farrell and, Barnsley, you put yourself there, didn't you?
Anyone who fears losing would say, I scored it, ref.
OK, final element of today's podcast. We will now... I've already gone with Barnsley. Your god or your goddess of the week, Al.
I've gone for a collection of gods. Those heroes on Hackney Marshes at the weekend. Old Streetonians versus London Welsh played a 0-0. Fair play to them for chucking on for 80 minutes in the rain,
that
slogging it out for a shot.
Brilliant. Well done. And what division was that in, that where you find London Welsh now? I've got you now.
They're down there.
I know, but London Welsh were Premiership 4 years ago, and now they're... You're talking
basement.
League 29, aren't you? But we'll be watching their comeback.
Goddess, the lady I followed out of Loftus-Versfeld at full time, who said, I don't care what the score is, I'm proud of the boys. And I love that because we are obsessed with winning. Hence, we do things like cheat and don't claim we've knocked it on when we have. She summed up the atmosphere of that ground. She also summed up why Erasmus is going the right way, because winning wasn't everything for them. It was the quality of the performance. And the South African people understood that. And because of that, their team will be heading in the right way. She got it in a way a lot of us in the media and a lot of players and coaches do not. It's not always about winning. It's about how well you play. It took me back to 2009 when the Lions lost... The Lions lost that second test at Loftus to go down and lose the series. They lost to a magnificent South African team. It was an epic effort by the Lions. One of their best test performances, even though they lost.
Also, he gave thanks to that woman because it gave him his intro for today's piece.
I know.
Right, always.
She's really helped him out big time.
We're all looking for help there, boys.
Okay, Chris.
Mine is a man who went from Jose Mourinho to Sir Alex Ferguson in one rant. Michael Checker. It was fantastic. What great television.
Jeez,
it is an unbelievable performance. It was just great. And the way he keeps on pointing at people and sort of almost offering them out, it's great to see.
This was his half-time rant.
Yeah, when they had a record
Australia
second half,
what was the score at half-time they were down?
31-7, was that right?
And then they won 45.
40. Yeah,
the biggest turnaround in the history of... there were no flying hair dryers. There was no flying saucers.
He just did
cups.
It with pointy fingers.
He did pointy fingers, and boy, that pointy finger worked.
Save his job. Okay, casting vote. Well, I'm with you, Chris. Thank you very much, Michael Checker. God of the week. He'll be so chuffed, won't he? I mean, you know, you've won a test match, but really, God of the week is
he's achieved a lot in his life. Michael Randwick beat Bath when I was playing against him. He's had a very successful business.
He's proud of that.
He's gone to a World Cup final.
He still talks about that Randwick Bath result.
He's gone to a World Cup final, but he has never been. God of the week.
and he is now.
Amazing.
Gents, thank you very much indeed. Just before we finish, we talked about this beforehand, and we didn't want to leave the ruck without saying that Steve Ajomo, a former England player and Bath teammate of Barnsley.
And good friend.
A good friend of Barnsley, suffered a stroke at the weekend. And we here would like to send him our best wishes for a very speedy recovery.
Yeah.
To everyone else out there, thank you very much for downloading, listening. We love having you as our audience, and we'll be back again next week.
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.